Welcome to Food Life Freedom, the podcast for those wanting to find a peaceful relationship with food and body. Today, Ella and I are speaking about how to get started with intuitive eating, why it can feel like you are doing it wrong, and what makes it so difficult to let go of dieting. I'm Emma Townsend, a UK registered dietitian and a certified intuitive eating counsellor. I support clients to stop stressing over food rules and to naturally eat in a way that supports their body and mind. This episode is brought to you by Reclaiming Your Food Freedom, a 3-month supported program that brings you all the tools and support you need for a healthy relationship with food and body. To learn more about how you can reclaim your food freedom, head to foodlifefreedom.com. And because we are all unique, this episode cannot offer personalized advice. Please use this as an opportunity to learn and explore. But if something does not sit with you, then it's not meant for your unique self. And if you have any health concerns, please seek personalized support from a registered healthcare provider. So let's dive straight into this episode on how to get started with intuitive eating. So I'm really excited to introduce Ella Law, who's an associate registered nutritionist and a certified intuitive eating counselor. And Ella and I actually went through the training to become certified in intuitive eating together back in 2020. So I'm really excited for this conversation where we're going to dive into the earlier stages of intuitive eating and why it can feel so hard to stop dieting even when we know it's causing us harm. And Ella, I'm really curious what prompted you to become an intuitive eater and what that journey was like for you.
Hi, I'm really excited to be here. Thank you very much for inviting me on. Yeah, that's a really good question. I think my background is in public health nutrition, and like probably every other public health nutritionist, I was very much immersed in diet culture and the same old messages that we hear over and over again that are very stigmatizing and fat phobic and also potentially not very, very true. So I was very much immersed in that, but working in that sort of field, there was something that didn't sit quite right with me. I felt like this isn't right. I don't want parents to cry when I talk about their children's weight. I don't want people to feel like they're doing something wrong. It just didn't sit right with me. And I suppose I've been generally an intuitive eater for most of my life. But when I did my nutrition master's, I veered off that a little bit and became a little bit obsessed with healthy eating, and please put speech marks around all of that when you're listening to this, because I'm not massively fond of these terms, and you know, eating healthy foods rather than processed foods and all of that kind of stuff that you hear in diet culture. But then I went to a conference and Laura Thomas was speaking, and some of your listeners might know Laura Thomas. She's written a really good book called Just Eat It, and she's got a great podcast as well. And she talked about intuitive eating, and I thought, wow, right, okay, that makes complete sense. And that's what I should be doing. And it kind of, you know, on reflection, is what I've always done in my life. But then doing the nutrition degree kind of got me off that path and made me too obsessed with food. And it didn't feel good. It didn't feel like it was the right thing to do. So I studied a course with Laura, and then you and I did the intuitive eating counselor training at the same time. And it just felt so right. And ever since then, I've been working on my own intuitive eating and my own relationship with food and my body, and at the same time, learned how to support others with it.
I can really relate as well to growing up as an intuitive eater, certainly for the most part, and going through training to become a dietitian. I definitely saw a pull towards some aspects of diet culture and having a fear towards certain foods, and especially a morality of, oh, I don't eat those kind of foods like other people do, which really needed to be challenged. So I'm glad I learned about intuitive eating as well.
Yeah, it's that that pull, isn't it, when you learn about certain things and then everyone around you says the same stuff and you start doubting yourself. You think, oh, maybe I got it all wrong. Maybe there are good foods and bad foods. Maybe I should tell people what to eat. And it really throws you because, you know, what you've done intuitively all your life suddenly gets questioned by this training course. And, you know, it's just very unsettling for a while.
Yeah, definitely. And that doubt that you mentioned as well, I think that's a big one that comes up. I know I experienced that a lot, doubting my own knowledge or doubting what I could see in the person, the client I was working with, and how the way they were reacting because of what I'd been told to tell them. And I also see that a lot in clients who might want to start intuitive eating, or people who want to start intuitive eating, and really doubting themselves and doubting that they have that ability.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know if you find that in your work as well, I find now when I'm working with people on intuitive eating, it's almost the other way around. It's the doubt that eating intuitively can possibly be the thing that gets people to a peaceful relationship or health or well-being, because of the diet messages being so loud and so ingrained in so many people. So it's almost like the opposite, isn't it? That we kind of need to help people to understand that there is another way.
Yeah. And often what we're helping people do is it feels really counterintuitive. It feels like we're saying, instead of cutting out all of these foods that you feel so out of control around, you have to let them in. And that can feel really counterintuitive and understandably really, really difficult when we've had these diet culture messages coming at us for so long.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as well as, I guess, our personal experience, but also the personal experience of so many people, we also see the research showing the harms that dieting is causing as well, and that dieting just isn't actually working for so many people. Yet even when we have this personal experience ourselves, or for someone who's stuck in that dieting cycle, even learning about how diets don't work and learning what their research shows, we can still feel very drawn to dieting. So why does dieting, or maybe it's more what we hope to achieve from dieting, why does that have such a strong pull over us?
That is such a good question. I think it's quite a complex one. I think it is what we just said. It's that growing up with that message that thin is healthy and thin is better and thin is morally superior. Unfortunately, a lot of people and lots of my clients have grown up with that message. And sometimes it's not even an overt kind of message that they're being told. It can be very subtle. It can be very just very sort of sly, sneaking into your own way of looking at your body and the way that you perceive yourself and your body. And I think it is the constant barrage of those messages. You know, you just open a magazine, you turn on the telly, you read a book, you listen to something on the radio, you go to work and your colleagues talk about it. Diet and diet culture is just that sort of talk is everywhere. So it's really difficult to go against that. So I salute everybody who wants to do this work, who seeks out support, because it's a massive step. And it can feel really lonely as well, because, you know, people bond over dieting, you know, families, mothers, daughters, sisters, husbands, you know, you bond over diets. You go to the same diet club, you try the same recipe book together. There's all sorts of things that make it very easy to diet and to go and do that instead of working on intuitive eating, which, as I said, can feel really lonely, because if no one else around you does it, it's a lot easier to do what everyone does and to say what everyone says. And it gets reinforced by all the messages that we hear in the media, on social media, on telly. It's just the same message over and over again. So obviously people will feel like, well, am I wrong if I think that that's wrong? Am I the one here who hasn't got it right? So it's just very, very tricky. And then I think another thing, another aspect of, you know, the strong pull of dieting is that dieting has evolved and it's reinvented itself so many times. And currently, I think the thing that it drums home is that it's all about health. And of course, we all want to be healthy. So if something is selling us health without necessarily sort of telling us that it's also focusing on weight loss, we think, oh, well, we're doing the right thing here. Because just like thinness, the pursuit of health has also got a very high moral value in society. So we think we are good, in inverted commas, if we pursue that goal.
Yeah. Definitely. And I think it's a really good point you raised that the messages we receive say it's about health, yet it's also okay to do behaviors that are very obviously not healthy to get this, I guess, idea of health that we're being sold. But the underlying, the messages underneath that are often a lot more subtle, not always, but often a lot more subtle, actually tell us it's a lot deeper than that. They tell us our say value or worth is related to our body size, and we know that's very untrue. But in our culture, in our society, it's become very normalized.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think even if we find ourselves in a body that is not socially deemed to be the norm or the ideal, I don't know how to phrase this, even the pursuit of getting there is applauded. So, you know, as long as we're trying, we are morally superior. As long as we're doing something about it, as long as we're trying to fix it, you know, we're doing all we can. And that's the kind of message that we get all the time from everywhere. You know, we get that applause when we try and lose weight. We get that applause when we're trying to be healthy. It's very difficult to go against that.
And we hear all these messages, I guess, around us. And that's one thing, to hear them around and have to fight against it with maybe other people's perceptions of us. But then what also happens is when we're surrounded by these messages from all over for so long, they do become internalized as well. And we can start having those beliefs about ourselves. So then when we decide to say move away from dieting and move away from this way of eating and thinking about our body that's causing us so much harm, we are also left with the fact that we do believe these things, even if we've learned maybe otherwise and are starting to have some other thoughts, those deeper thoughts, they've been with us for so long. They've been with us for so many years now that they're really ingrained and they're still stronger than the new information we're learning. And it can feel like, oh, I'm never going to be able to think differently. But that's just because the other messages are so, so strong. And we need to normalize the new messages. We need to get them stronger. We need to make them the kinder messages to ourselves, and that our worth and value is not based on body size or what we eat, a lot stronger than the messages that say it is.
Yeah, it becomes part of our identity. And I think that's something that a lot of people struggle with. I would think that if you, just as an example, if you are, and a lot of people who have got a disordered relationship with food actually are also perfectionists and describe themselves as control freaks, or they're people pleasers, all of those kind of elements play a massive part in it. Because if you think about how we may use food and those aspects, you know, if things are out of control around us, we might use food to control that small part of our life. If we are people pleasers, we don't want people to think badly about us, so we do everything that is socially acceptable. That includes maybe dieting or the attempt to lose weight or things like that. You know, those kind of things can play a massive part in our relationship with food. From a personal point of view, you know, when I did my nutrition master's, the sort of healthy eating angle became part of my identity. It was the thing that, you know, oh, Ella is the healthy eater and everyone looks at Ella and what does she choose for lunch? And I always felt this pressure to make a nutritionally balanced choice. You know, you wouldn't see me in a restaurant ordering something that didn't have at least a salad on the side. It was just one of those pressures that it did become part of my identity. And I think a lot of people have that as well. You know, if you have those sort of clean eating, healthy eating tendencies, that might be part of your identity. Or if you are the person in a larger body amongst your friends, that might become part of your identity. And then if there is anything that challenges that it almost feels like an attack on your personality, on your on yourself. So that can be really tricky to deal with. And it needs a lot of, you know, unpacking and really looking at your values and at your core self and who you actually are as a person. And a lot of the time that is really suppressed. Oh, we're going deep here, Emma.
Yeah. As you mentioned before, like even looking at it from the nutritionist and dietitian, nutrition professional perspective, it does become ingrained throughout the training and the study for that as well. And I definitely relate to being, I know in my first years of work as a dietitian, some of my other friends who are dietitians as well would get invited to barbecues together. And it was like, oh, the dietitians always are the ones that bring the salad, as if that's like the healthy part of the meal. Mm-hmm. And it does become ingrained. And then from the perspective of people who have been dieting or are in a body that is made to feel different by society as well, that does become that sense of who we are.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I totally resonates with me what you just said. And I think that is where it's hardest to get unstuck, because it's not just a behavior we're trying to change or alter. It is part of us that we're trying to, you know, to kind of look at and to investigate and to explore. And that's usually the hardest and the most challenging thing to do.
And when we're trying to help someone with their own sense of self, there's obviously that massive barrier, our society and our culture, I guess, just in the way that's reinforcing these beliefs and is often placing some different kinds of discrimination on them for some people, especially those in larger bodies. We can teach, or we can support them to, I guess, to think differently about themselves, to help to unpack some of these beliefs that they've got and form new, more helpful ones. But then there's that next step of helping them to navigate a culture and a society that isn't designed for them and is discriminatory against them as well.
Mm. Yeah, and that's really hard. And I think we need to acknowledge that as well, that it is hard, it is challenging, and it sucks a lot of the time. And it just feels like it's unfair. And I think it does become a bit of not a stumbling block, but for a lot of people it becomes that moment when they get stuck. I mentioned to you off mic earlier is that there's, even with intuitive eating, there is a bit of a honeymoon phase, just like in a diet, when you know you lose your first few pounds and you feel great and everything's going so well, and then you reach that plateau and you're sick of the diet, you're sick of restricting, you have cravings, the weight's not dropping off anymore, you may be starting to put on weight. You know, that's when the honeymoon phase of the diet finishes. And people who've been on a diet will know exactly what I'm talking about, because it happens pretty much with every single diet. But a similar kind of thing can happen when you start intuitive eating. And I've noticed that recently with clients, actually, that they really want to do it. They're sick of, they're done with diets. They don't want to do that anymore. They know it doesn't work for them. They've mentally and physically exhausted with it. They really think intuitive eating, and they know, they've intellectualized that it is the right thing for them. And they throw themselves into it, and it's all working out really well. And then they come to a point where that body image part comes back in. And I think that is where it gets really challenging, because you know they know intellectually that this is what I want to do, this all makes sense to me, there is evidence for it, it's the right thing to do, however I still want to lose weight. I still feel like I would be, this is sort of a little voice on their shoulder saying, you'd still be healthier, you'd still be happier if you were in a smaller body. And it's then, you know, working out, well, is that true? When has that happened in the past? And the answer is generally, well, it hasn't actually. And it's holding space for that, because that is part and parcel of it. Intuitive eating isn't a straight journey where, you know, you just go up and that's it. It's back and forth and it's going in circles and you feel like you're doing three steps back. But if you really look at it with an intuitive eating lens, is that you're never going backwards. You might be going sideways for a bit, and you are able then to use that sidestep as another opportunity to learn something about you. So nothing is a wasted opportunity in intuitive eating. And even if you get to that place of, oh, I'm feeling really stuck here because that voice is still there telling me I need to lose weight, sort of normalizing that and saying, well, of course it is, because everyone and their dog tells you about that, that's what you should be doing. And it's really difficult to go against it. So sometimes I think we need to stop that battle, let that thought be there, invite it in as maybe an unwelcome friend that we don't really want to have in our house, but that we can't just shut the door in their face, and just say, okay, well, you're here now, you thought, can we just sit with you for a bit, and then you can go again, rather than battling it and understanding, well, yes, we will have those thoughts. We can't just get rid of them completely. But you said something really good earlier about sort of that voice is too loud. And sometimes it is loud. So we need to sort of work on strategies to dial the volume down, because we can't shut that voice off completely if that has been part of our lives forevermore. It's very unlikely that we can get rid of it completely. So I think, you know, finding ways of letting it in, then maybe dialing down the volume and saying, okay, you've had your say. Let's just move back to, you know, what feels good for us and what feels like it's the right thing for us. Hope that made sense.
Yeah, definitely. Yep. And when we think about the thoughts that we have in our head, which translate to these voices that come up, a lot of people can feel like, describe it as these voices or these thoughts that naturally we all have. we all have them, this monologue that goes through our head. As our brain's really, really good at trying to save us time and energy in a lot of ways. So it makes sense for our brain to have these automatic thoughts that come up in certain situations. Otherwise, we'd spend so long just trying to get through our morning routine or something like that. But when the automatic thoughts we're having are no longer helpful or no longer supportive, that's where we need to come in and try break that cycle of these thoughts. So it could be these thoughts that every time we're maybe getting out the shower, looking in the mirror, we start having these kind of thoughts beating ourselves up. It's just the first step is becoming aware of mm-hmm. the thoughts and kind of catching them to break that cycle of them being automatic, mm-hmm. and then slowly starting to bring new thoughts in. And it's likely because of, as you said, but the world we live in, having so much diet messages around, as well as them being there for so long, we're probably not going to ever completely get rid of them, but we can get them to a place where they're the less strong voice, they're the less strong thought pathway that's coming up. And when they do come up, that we have tools to deal with them so that we can help to not let them take over anymore.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I think sometimes that's in itself is a revelation to people, that they think that they, oh, I have to get rid of that voice completely, otherwise I'm not doing this right. And it's a revelation when they hear, actually, no, that voice is completely legitimate and it's valid, and, you know, it's just trying to make its point. But as you said, it's an automatic kind of response to something that is no longer serving us, and that's a thought pattern that is no longer serving us. So I think, you know, sort of exactly what you said, just trying to find new thoughts that can replace the old thoughts, or that can maybe be amplified, and the other old thoughts that aren't very helpful are being dialed down. I think that's a really good strategy.
Yeah, definitely. And I just wanted to touch on as well what you mentioned before when you said no opportunity is a wasted opportunity with intuitive eating. Mm-hmm. And I love that so much, because what I often find as well is when people are coming from this diet mindset and this cycle of dieting is with a diet, you do it, say, quote unquote, perfectly. And as soon as you, quote unquote, screw it up, everything falls apart. Or it's maybe that's the end of the diet, or maybe it's like, well, I've broken it for today, I'll start again tomorrow. And what I see as well fairly often is maybe after a week or a few weeks, I get emails from the clients I've started working with saying, I've just screwed it up, and sending an email like, I just ate all this today and I didn't even think about it, and I didn't feel good, and I've just like stuffed the whole thing up. And just bringing it back, saying there's no right or wrong. This is a learning experience. And we can reflect on that a lot more when we speak, or you've got some tools that you can also kind of reflect through it yourself as well, so that we can firstly learn what happens, so that most of the time eating can eventually feel good. But also knowing that one of the differences between an intuitive eater and someone who's not an intuitive eater yet is not that we eat perfectly and eat in a way that feels great all of the time. We will eat probably in a way that feels good more of the time. But the difference is that when we eat in a way that doesn't feel good, which is completely normal to do sometimes, is that we don't beat ourselves up over it.
Yeah, 100%. I think it is that for the most part, as Evelyn Tribbley and Elise Resch always say, it's like for the most part, we eat in a way that feels good. But, you know, everyone has those days where, you know, we might not feel like it, there might not be the bandwidth to even think about what we might want to eat. And that is not, it's not a failure. You're not failing at this. It's actually a really good opportunity to think about, well, why was that? What was going on for me on that day that made me have, you know, no motivation to do anything? What else was going on? Because it's never just about, you know, the food. It is about, you know, what else is going on. And it just highlights what you just said. It just highlights that sort of a tendency of a lot of people to be either all in or all out. There's nothing in the gray area in the middle. It's very much like, I either do this properly or I don't do it at all. And I find that, and I don't know if you have the same experience with your clients, I find that a lot of the time my clients are perfectionists. They do things properly or they don't do it at all, because then it's like, what's the point? Yeah. And then often what happens with dieting is like there's a inverted comma slip up of whatever meal plan they had, and then it's that what the hell kind of reaction. I've slipped up, I might as well go completely to the other side. And it's a real tricky thing for people to move into the gray, because the gray doesn't feel very safe, because we don't know the gray very well. We know the black and the white, and we know the one or the other, but we don't really know what it's like to kind of be in the middle without anyone telling us what to do, because that feels very scary for a lot of people. And yeah, it's sort of taking baby steps into that gray area that will help. And that's all part of this exploration of this. Well, things haven't gone the way that I had planned. However, let's look at why that is. And let's look at why it's so important to do the things the way that I had planned them. So it's all about exploring, isn't it? It's all about sort of looking at the why and what sort of explains the choice that we made.
Yeah. And when we think about this gray area in the middle as well, that is really scary. That's really imperfect. That's feels really out of touch. When we're just starting intuitive eating, we are starting the work to unpack diet culture and to stop using food rules and to start having more flexibility around our food. But we're doing this without having yet learned how to connect with our body. And for a lot of people, we've lost that connection, especially when we've been dieting for a long time. We're not really able to understand when we're hungry, when we're full, when we're satisfied from food, how to satisfy ourselves from food, what else is going on, when is our emotions, all of this. So when we go down this path that feels like the quote unquote failing at a diet, where we maybe have a day or a period where we eat in a really uncomfortable way and feel like, oh, I've just screwed it all up, going back to dieting, it really feels safer. And we're doing that from a place of self-care, because we're like, well, I obviously can't be trusted. That's been reinforced to us based on the behaviors that we've had. So then we go back to dieting where it feels safer, it feels more in control. Even though deep down we know that long term it hasn't really helped us and it's not likely to help long term, it does come from that place of self-care, even though we know restricting food isn't a caring behavior for our body.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. I think it is that illusion of safety, isn't it? That it feels safe because we know it. It's the danger is in the unknown. It's in the thing that we don't know and maybe don't really understand. And then you just mentioned trust, and I think that's a really important one, isn't it? We don't really trust our body because we never had to, because someone was there to tell us what to do. So why would we listen to what our body wants? Because, you know, obviously it hasn't got a clue. It will just make us eat all the chocolate. And it's understanding that, know that if you move into that gray area and let go of that control, your body is going to prove to you that it can regulate itself. But getting to that place where that feels like a safe thing to do can take quite a while, and it can be really, really challenging. And another thing you just mentioned, and I thought that was really interesting, is that disconnect. And I find that that is something that a lot of people really struggle with, is that we all live in our heads. It's almost like our bodies are cut off. Everything is intellectualized. We understand everything and we kind of think about stuff, but we feel things in our heads, but we don't feel things in our bodies. And I think that's a massive aspect of learning that, or letting that trust build up again, is that we need to learn how emotions show up in our body. And, you know, when we think, oh, that made me really frustrated, you know, really thinking about, well, where in your body is that frustration showing up? And a lot of the time when I probe clients about this, they say, oh, yeah, I really thought about, and I'm like, no, not where you think, where in your body is it? And it's really, really tricky to build that connection. But the more you practice that, and the more you say, okay, let me feel where it is, this is where it is, this is where it's showing up, and this is what it looks like in my body, and this is how I'm feeling it physically, the more of a connection you build between your brain and your body, and the more embodied you become. So you are more present, you are less in your thoughts, and therefore probably less anxious, and you are able to listen to your body more. You start trusting it, because what's going on in your head and in your body is the same thing, and therefore you build back that trust that your body knows and that your body is talking to you and communicating with you.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that was one of the big aha moments as well during intuitive eating training, learning about the way we feel emotion in our body, and which I can explore this later in the show as well in another episode. But that is called interoceptive awareness, the internal sensations that we get in our body that our body uses to communicate with us. And when we're dieting, it's moving us away from using these internal sensations to guide our eating, to guide our appetite, also guide our self-care as well. Dieting often goes beyond just food. And we think of dieting as just, oh, it's just telling us how to eat or when to move and things like that. But it also does, as you just mentioned, break that connection with understanding our emotions as well. And if we're not able to feel our emotions and understand the different sensations that let us know different emotional states in our body, we're a lot less likely to be able to cope with those as well.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think we've seen, well, from what we've just spoken about now, and it goes so much further as well, that intuitive eating is just so much more than focusing on the food. So it's so much more than just, oh, I'm going to stop dieting and now I'm going to eat what I want and things are going to then be easier, or I'm going to be free of dieting. There's so much that comes with that to unpack. So when we do, I guess, want to let go of dieting and start intuitive eating, what is it that we do need to start exploring to move towards intuitive eating and then not be drawn back into that diet cycle?
Oh gosh, that's a whole new episode, I think. But I suppose in a nutshell, it is I think the foundation of intuitive eating is the rejection of the diet mentality, and I think that's one that we can always circle back to. And it's about understanding sort of the basic premise about weight and health, that your weight does not define your health, that health looks differently in different bodies. Health is a bit of a very vague concept because, if you really explore it, what is healthy? Who is healthy? Is there such a thing as perfect health? So really sort of explore that, and then do that in the context of food, and also understand that food is only a tiny part of our potential health outcomes. There's not that much control we have over our health outcomes in total. And sort of stepping away from thinking that it's completely within our control, that, by the way we eat and by the way we move our bodies, that we can, live a long, healthy life. It may be a part of it, but it's not all of it. So I think just sort of looking at that and acknowledging that is really helpful to let go of those old beliefs of, thinness equaling health, and that we need to eat in a certain way. So letting go of those thoughts, I think, is just really, really, really important as a foundation. And then also starting to, working on how do we talk, and as you said earlier, it's becoming aware initially, how do we talk about food? What language do we use when we talk about food? What, is there sort of some morality around it? Is there, do we see certain things as good or bad? Can we maybe come to a way of seeing foods as neutral? That's really tricky, but it's something that is really important for intuitive eating, where we don't place a judgment on particular foods, on specific foods, and just see all foods as part of, our overall diet. And yeah, letting go of that good or bad, healthy or unhealthy kind of narrative. I think those are really good starting points.
Yeah, definitely. And what understandably I see quite often for people who want to move towards intuitive eating is that we want to get to that place where food feels good. So we want to kind of focus on the parts of intuitive eating or the principles of intuitive eating that go directly there, like being able to eat whatever we want, all the things that focus on the food directly. But it's a really great reminder, everything you've just said, that the foundation is doing that work beforehand. And that's one of the big reasons when I see people have sort of tried intuitive eating in the past and feel like it's not for them, feel like they can't do it, feel like it's something else they're failing, is that they haven't explored all those underlying and really important foundational areas to explore that you just mentioned before then trying to work on the way they feel around food and their emotions and all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that is so key, because it can be very easily, intuitive eating can be very easily misconstrued as a free fall. You can eat whatever you want, however much and whenever. It's not, there's no, you can do whatever you want. And or it's the hunger and fullness diet, where you kind of only eat when you're hungry or only eat when you're full. But I think it is taking a couple of things in isolation, and without the foundation and understanding, you'll set yourself up for being in a place where intuitive eating suddenly doesn't make sense to you anymore. Because if we just eat however much and whenever, whenever we want, we're not actually listening to our bodies. We're just, if it's a free-for-all, we just eat for the sake of eating, just because we've given ourselves permission to eat. But that permission may not be unconditional. That permission may still be tied up in diet culture. That permission might still have some morality attached to it, or there's emotional aspects that we haven't taken into account. And then there's the whole body respect part, where, our body, we might not respect our body, but we just do that one thing that's part of intuitive eating, which, is on its own is just not going to work, unfortunately. So that's why, as you said, we need to take loads of different aspects into account, but we need to have a strong foundation.
Yeah, definitely. I love that. And I think when we look at we look at diet culture and it's reframed in so many ways, and intuitive eating can also be taken on by diet culture as well. And when it is, it's usually, say, one of the principles taken out or a few of the principles taken out. So the eat whatever you want kind of part of intuitive eating is taken on its own. And that's used kind of as its sole thing, or it's the hunger fullness diet, which is just two of the principles of intuitive eating, and they're taken out and they're often paired with, oh, if you eat just when you're hungry and stop eating when you're full, then you'll maybe lose weight or be healthier, mm-hmm. or something that still brings it back to morality around food and body as mm-hmm. well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting that, you know, I think this is a little warning sign for, or like a red flag for anyone who's interested in exploring intuitive eating, that whenever it circles back to, oh, you may lose weight, or this is how you lose weight, or this is how you change your body, that is not intuitive eating, that is a diet. So even if it's disguised as intuitive eating, and as you rightly said, a lot of diets now choose to use the words intuitive and eating, possibly even strung together, which is really infuriating. It is literally just one aspect taken out in isolation. And yeah, it just doesn't work like that, unfortunately. And there will always be something that will alert you to the fact that it is just another weight loss diet or another way of shrinking your body and not proper intuitive eating.
Yeah. And that's a really great reminder as well, when people are maybe feeling like it's hasn't worked long term for them, or they've started really struggling, and coming back to those foundation of really building that solid sense of who we are and unpacking the diet culture thoughts. Ella, it's been so lovely to speak with you today. And I'd love for you to be able to share with everyone as well where they can find you, so they can hear more from you about how to get started with intuitive eating.
Oh, I'd love to share that. And thank you again so much for having me. It's always lovely to speak to you. And I think we've had a really deep conversation today, and hopefully people who listen will find it helpful, especially if they're just starting on their own intuitive eating journey. So people can find me. It's very easy. It's just Ella Law Nutrition on all channels. Ella with one L. It's at Ella Law Nutrition on Instagram and on Facebook. I've got a free Facebook community if anyone's interested in joining that. Just DM me. And my website is ellalawnutrition.co.uk, and there's all my information about what I offer. And there's also, which I always want to highlight, a page with resources, because when you start intuitive eating, you may not know where to go first. So I've got a list of books that I recommend, of podcasts, of lots of Instagram accounts that are good to follow. And I regularly update that. So have a look at that if you're new to this, and if you're interested in finding out a little bit more. And a lot of those resources are free, so that's really helpful, hopefully.
That is really helpful. Oh, thank you for sharing that. And it's been really lovely to speak with you today, Ella.
And you too. Thank you for having me, Emma.
If you have gotten something from today's episode, hit follow to see upcoming episodes and interact with myself and today's guest on Instagram at food.life.freedom. To help more people eat without guilt and feel at peace in their body, leave a 5-star review and share with your community by clicking the 3-dot symbol at the bottom of the episode. For show notes and references, head to foodlifefreedom.com/podcast. And to learn how you can get personalized support with my 3-month Reclaiming Your Food Freedom program, head to foodlifefreedom.com. See you next week.